started discussing the concept of Eretz Yisrael and its sanctity to define its very essence in halacha, and we differentiated between two concepts. One is called Shem Eretz Yisrael, and the other is called Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. The Kedushas Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Yisrael that underwent a process in which, like any other sanctity, you need a Mekadesh. A Mekadesh means something that triggers off the Kedusha and generates it. Just like, for example, in Kinyonim, you need a Dover HaMakne that generates the Kinyon. Perhaps it's a Maisa Kinyon, Das Makne, whatever it might be. In every area of Halacha, you need an action that generates a new Halachic status. And in the case of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, by what process do we engender this Kedushas Eretz Yisrael? Well, even before the Beis HaMikdash is built, immediately when Yoshua ben Nun enters the land and conquers it, that act of kibush, of military conquest, itself is a Mekadesh. Or, for example, at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, when the people were called on to, en masse, settle in Eretz Yisrael, tragically not enough Jews came, but those who came, their settlement, which is called Chazaka, established and engendered the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, as we said many times, expresses itself in the Kedushas Migdash as it spreads throughout the land of Israel, in the Kedushas Karka, as it engenders a certain special status in Halacha, engendering new mitzvahs, like Trumas and Maisvahs and Shemitah and Yovel and Peah and Shikha Leket, as we discussed in great length. But now, what is Eretz Yisrael in and of itself? You know, if you strip it of all its makadshim and all its sophisticated halachic processes that engender the Kedusha, let's imagine what Eretz Yisrael and its status was in and of itself without the Mekadesh. The Mekadesh is sort of like the second level, the layer on top. But what is Eretz Yisrael in its very essence?
But without which Mekadesh?
Without the Mekadesh of Yoshua, without the Mekadesh of Ezra Nehemiah. For example, what's the status of Eretz Yisrael during the 70 years following the Churban Bayis Rishon, because Kiddushah L'Shaita below Kiddushah level, so the original Kiddush of Yoshua is completely null and void. We haven't yet built the second Beis HaMikdash, and the people of Israel have not yet settled the land of Israel at the time of Ezra Nehemiah Aliyah Shniyah. So we're in that 70 year period in between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. There's no Kiddush. Is Eretz Yisrael therefore like any land on the face of the earth? Or does it still maintain its status as what?
Shemir.
As Shem Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So that was the Chiddush of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, that there's some concept called Shem Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael in and of itself. Eretz Yisrael was given as an eternal land, eternal possession of the Jewish people from the time of Avraham Avinu, for all times. And if anyone comes forward and says, Listem Atem, and accuses us of stealing the land, usurping it, it's ours. It was granted to us by Almighty God from Kadmas Danan, from the early dawn of history. And that's called Shem Eretz Yisrael. Now, on this page that I gave you, I would like to expand a little bit on this definition of Shem Eretz Yisrael. And we're going to take a look at number 6, number 7, number 8. It should be on the first side of your page. Number 6 is a Rambam in Hilchos Rotzeach Ushmir Sanefesh in the 10th Perek, which addresses the issue of Egla Rufa. When you find a slain body in between two cities, there's a whole process, a whole mitzvah called Egla Rufa in Parsha Shoftim. And the Rambam, right up front, establishes the bounds of Egla Rufa. Where does this mitzvah apply? Says the Rambam, Ein din Egla Rufa noig ela be'eretz Yisrael. But notice that he has three words at the end. V'chein be'Eivr HaYarden. Now, Eivr HaYarden, which is the eastern side of the Jordan, was conquered by Olei Mitzrayim at the time of Yoshua. Even before Yoshua. It was not part of Eretz Yisrael at the time of Ezra Nehemiah. Now, what happened to the original Kiddush at the time of Yoshua, of the Olei Mitzrayim? What was the fate or the destiny of that original Kiddush? It was completely null and void. It was completely destroyed at the time of the Churban of the Bavlim. So that first Kiddush no longer exists. That's called Kiddush L'Shaita V'lo Kiddush L'Asid Lavo. So then what are we left with? We're left with Eivra Yarden, which although it was part of the original Eretz Yisrael, it was left out of the second Aliyah at the time of the Kiddush Sheni of Ezra Nehemiah. Therefore, it doesn't have Kiddush Eretz Yisrael. Why does the Rambam then say that Egla Rufa as a mitzvah extends even as far as Eivra Yarden? It includes Eivra Yarden. That's question number one. Question number two, if you take a look at the Rambam with regard to the mitzvah of Smicha, that's in Hilchos Sanhedrin Perek Dal, that's number 8 on your page, the Rambam says that Ein Somchins Kenim B'chutz Laretz. So you have Smicha. That's ordination, right? So let's say so-and-so was ordained in an unbroken chain that leads back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So he certainly has smicha. And smicha was granted to him in Eretz Yisrael. He now has the power to confer smicha on someone else. Says the Rama, but he can't do so in Chutz Laretz. He can only do so where? In Eretz Yisrael. The mitzvah smicha only applies to Eretz Yisrael. V'afal pisha elu hasomchim nismichu baretz. Even though this person got a smicha in Eretz Yisrael, he cannot confer and transfer smicha to someone else outside of Eretz Yisrael, only in Eretz Yisrael, no matter how great he might be. But at the end of the Rambam, in Perek Dal of Milchus Sanhedrin Halacha Vav, the Rambam writes the following, I underlined it. V'chol Eretz Yisrael shechziku ba ole Mitzrayim re'uya l'smicha. What are the bounds of Eretz Yisrael as far as the mitzvah of smicha is concerned? And what does the Rambam define it? Who settled this land and established it as part of Eretz Yisrael? Ole Mitzrayim, is that crystal clear? Implying that the Ole Bavel at the time of the second Aliyah did not reach as far as this area is concerned. That location was outside, beyond the bounds of the Eretz Yisrael that was established at the time of the Ole Mitzrayim. And yet the Rambam says that that's enough for the mitzvah of smicha. But we don't understand the Rambam, because the original Kiddush of Ole Mitzrayim of Yoshua ben Nun is Kiddush L'Shaita V'lo Kiddush L'Asid Lavo. That Kiddush was completely abrogated at the time of Nebuchadnezzar, at the time of the Churban HaBayis. That Kiddush is gone. And if at the time of Ezra Nehemiah, the second process of Kiddush, it didn't extend to that area, then why should the mitzvah of Smichas Kenim apply in that area? And almost the identical question we could ask with regard to Kiddush HaChodesh, which is the Rambam in Perek Aleph Halacha Ches, it's number 7 on your page, where the Rambam says that you can have smicha even in Chutz Laretz. V'im haya adam gadol b'chach v'nismach b'eretz Yisrael v'yotza l'chutz laretz v'lo iniach b'eretz Yisrael kamoso, then he could be machashev chadoshim and koveya, he could be koveya the shonim, arav shonim in Chutz Laretz. And this apparently is the Rambam talking about even the period of time of the 70 years of between Churban Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. My friends, what do we see from all these Rambams? What is the, how shall I say, the ultimate bottom line that we have to derive from all these halachas, whether it's the mitzvah of Egla Rufa, whether it's the mitzvah of Smichas Kenan, the mitzvah of Kiddush HaKodesh? What Eretz Yisrael do I need for these mitzvahs to apply? And the answer is, speak a little louder, Shem Eretz Yisrael. All I need is Shem Eretz Yisrael. As long as it's within the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, that's sufficient. In other words, when we're not talking about a mitzvah that depends on Kedushas Karka, from the land itself, we're not talking about agricultural mitzvahs, when we're talking about Egla Rufa, or Smichas Kenim, or Kiddush HaKodesh, those are not agricultural mitzvahs. We don't need the process of Kiddush. All we need is the Shem Eretz Yisrael. It's essentially Eretz Yisrael. What is Eretz Yisrael? What is the Kinyan Klali? Says the Rav, it's a Kinyan, it's an ownership of all of Klal Yisrael that's granted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that Kinyan is eternal. It's Nitzchi. It will always exist. It sets up an entity called Eretz Yisrael, which is acquired by Knesset Yisrael for all times. And even if the Kedusha, the sanctity, is paka, it's completely undermined, it doesn't matter. It matters not. There's a Shem Eretz Yisrael. It's essentially Eretz Yisrael per se. And now I think we might have an ability to touch on one of the Rav's Chidushim that I cherish. I find it very close to my heart. Rabosai, let's talk for a moment about the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. We read the Torah publicly. We read the Torah publicly on Shabbos, not just once but twice, and on Mondays and Thursdays. We have special Kriyos during the Arba Parshios around Purim and Pesach time. We have Kriyas HaTorah. We complete the cycle of the Torah, according to our minhag, on an annual basis. In order to do so, we sometimes have to combine two parshios. And there's a halacha of haftorah. At the end of a parsha, we follow up the reading of the Torah with a haftorah. What do you do in the case where you have two parshios on that particular Shabbos? Which haftorah should you read? If the two Shabbos are separate, if the two parshios are separate, then clearly, for Parsha A, I read its Haftorah, and Parsha B, its. But what happens when you double up a Parsha? Which Haftorah should you say? And the two Haftorahs are fighting it out. So if you take a look at number one on your page, you'll see that the Ramah writes, and I underlined it, Kishekorim Shtei Parshios Maftirim Bachrona. We should always read the Haftorah of the second Parsha. What do we want to link up? The second parasha and its haftorah, because the haftorah is like a continuation of the kriya. So what was the last parasha that we read? The shniyah. So the shniyah engenders its haftorah. Then the Ramah says there's one exception to the rule. What's the exception to the rule? He says, milvad bi'achrei mos ukdosh. Because according to the simple application of the minhag, in a universal sense, which haftorah should we read? Achrei mos or kedosh? Kedosh. The maftirin halo kivnei kushiyim atem shehi haftoris achremos. Now I have the two haftoris for you on the bottom of your page. You see page number 3 and 4. Number 3 is the haftorah for achremos. You may have to turn the page to the other side, and that's the haftorah from Amos Perek Tes halo kivnei kushiyim atem. If you look at the haftorah of kedoshim, which comes from Yechezkel, which is number 4 on the bottom of your page, that's called the Parsha of Vahodata. You'll see Pasuk Beis, Eis Kol Toavo Seha. Does anybody know what Toavo means? It's the abomination. Now, obviously, when the Jewish people sin, Chet is an abomination. And the truth of the matter is that both of these Haftoros address sin, chet. Chet is a central feature in both haftorahs, whether it's the one for Achrimos from Amos, or it's the one from Yechezkel for Parshas Kedoshim, because take a look at Achrimos. It says over there, if you take a look, in Pasuk Ches, which is the second Pasuk in the haftorah, it says, Hinei Ein Hashem Elokim B'mamlecha HaChata. It's the reign of sin. V'shmadeti Oso Me'al Pnei Adoma. And I will destroy that country of sinners. And then in Pasuk Tes it says, "Vani osi b'chol agoyim es beis Yisrael." I will spread the people of Israel throughout the diaspora, the entire earth. And why? Because of sin. And not only that, in Pasuk Yud it says, "Bacherav yamusu kol chotei ami." The sinners of my nation will be killed by sword. This is a very scary haftorah. And yet, we prefer this haftorah, says the Ramah, in a case where you read in that same Shabbos both Achrimos and Kedoshim, over the haftorah for Kedoshim, which also identifies the sin of Israel. In Pasuk Beis, it says in Yechezkel Perikov Beis, Pasuk Beis, Vodata es kol toavoseha. This is called the toavos of Yerushalayim. So, gentlemen, what Masech are you learning these days?
Megillah,
great. So, in Megillah, the Gemara presents a machlokes on Daf Chaf Hei Amid Beis. I don't know if you got that far, between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer. According to the Shita of the Chachamim, you're allowed to recite the Haftorah of Tovos Yerushalayim, which is Haftoras Kedoshim from Parshas Yechezkel, from Sefer Yechezkel. That's the sheet of the Chacham. So, for example, if Kedoshim would ever fall out as a separate parsha unto itself, then technically we should be reading, like the Chachamim, this Haftorah called Toivos Yerushalayim. Clear? Rabbi Eliezer doesn't like it. And he says that we should never ever read the Haftorah of Parshas Kedoshim, because Ein Maftirin B'Tovos Yerushalayim. We never want to recite the Tovos of Yerushalayim. And the Gemara tells us a story. This you'll see number 5, which is on the top of your page. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Maisa Ba'odom Echad. It was a story of a person, Shayakore Lamala Mi Rabbi Eliezer. He was standing above Rabbi Eliezer, because the bima was raised above him. And he was reading from the Haftorah of Parshas Kedoshim, this particular Haftorah of Odatas Kol Tov Aseh. So Rabbi Eliezer got upset at him. Omar lo, Rabbi Eliezer said to him, Ad shata bodek b'toivos Yerushalayim. You're investigating the abominations of Yerushalayim? Tseyu b'dok b'toivos imecha. Wow, that's a heavy line. He was accusing him, if he investigates those who live in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, and he doesn't hesitate, he speaks freely about the abominations of those who reside in Eretz Yisrael, then let's check you out, and let's see if we investigate you, what will we find out about your yichus, about your lineage? And the Gemara tells us, the Braisa records, Bodku Achrov Umatsu Boshemetz Psul. They checked him out, and guess what they found? That his mother was not doing what she had to do. It wasn't such a kosher situation. And he came from a lineage of psul. Probably means psul mamzerus. So he was probably a mamzer. Now, lahalacha, we paskel like chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer, which means that if Parshas Kedoshim falls out on its own Shabbos, without Parshas Akremos, then we should be reading Daf Torah for Kedoshim. And if the two Parshas are read together, they coincide on the same Parsha, then we might as well read the second Parsha, the Haftorah of the second Parsha, which we always do, namely the Parsha, the Haftorah for Parshas Kedoshim, which is Torah Vos Yerushalayim, because we pass like Chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer. So the Rav said, no, that's not the minhag. He says, the minhag that I remember from Litta, from my childhood in that part of the world, was that when the two Parshas are read together, exactly as we saw in the Ramah, when there's an overlap between Achrimos and Kedoshim, which Haftorah we're going to read? Achrimos. Against the normal minhag, we're going to read the Haftorah of Halo Atem Kibnei Kushim. Why? Because even though Chet is mentioned in that parasha, however, from Pasuk Yud Aleph and on, if you take a look, there's an abrupt shift in the tone and the theme of this Haftorah. And all of a sudden, the Navi, Amos, starts talking and prophesizing about the great things that are going to lead to the redemption of Israel. Vayomahu akim esukas David anufalas. You remember this pasuk? Harach amonu yakim esukas David anufalas. And not only that, Leman Yirshu she'eras Edom will destroy the all the enemies of Edom, v'chol agoyim, asher niku shmi aleihem. Hine yomim ba'im in pasuk Yud Gimel. Great things are going to happen. V'shavti yeshvus ami, the people of Israel be returned to their place. V'natu kramim, they'll replant and reestablish, renew the settlement of Eretz Yisrael. Unetatem al admosam, v'lo yinatshu od me'al admosam, they will never again be undermined from their land. Says Rav Soloveitchik, since this Haftorah, although it begins with sin, it continues, and that's the main thrust of the Haftorah, its theme. Its primary theme is nechama, its consolation, its geula, its prophecy in a positive sense. Therefore, we prefer this Haftorah. And we're going to be machmir like the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer and avoid the Haftorah of Kedoshim at all costs. Okay, so wait a minute. You can get away with it, Rav Soloveitchik, in the case where Achrimos is combined with Kedoshim. So you've got the option of reading the Haftorah of Achrimos instead of the Haftorah of Kedoshim. But what are you going to do when Kedoshim is a separate parsha? So the Rav says that this was a very rare phenomenon, because what used to happen almost indefinitely What would happen was that usually when Kedoshim fell out as a separate parsha, it was either Rosh Chodesh or it was Erev Rosh Chodesh. Now, if Shabbos coincides with Rosh Chodesh, the Haftorah is Hashamayim Kisi. That's a whole different Haftorah from Yeshayah. If it's the day before Rosh Chodesh, meaning Rosh Chodesh is on a Sunday, then the Haftorah is going to be Machar Chodesh. He says, and even if there was no other possibility, for example, Kedoshim fell out as a separate reading on its own parsha, there was no Rosh Chodesh, there was no Erev Rosh Chodesh, the Minigan Lita was that they read the Haftorah, guess what, of Parshas Achrimos the second time, two Shabbosos in a row. So on Shabbos number one, which is the Shabbos of Achrimos, they read Halo Atem Kivdei Kishiyim, and on the following Shabbos, which is Parshas Kedoshim, once again they would read Halo Atem Kivdei Kishiyim.
If you never read the Haftarah for Parshat Kedoshim, if you always read the one for Achrimos, why have one at all?
So the Rav explained that the reading of the Haftorah as it's printed in our Sidurim or in our Chumashim reflects the pristine halacha. Now, it's the way the halacha was given in abstract terms. We pass on like the Chachamim, and we're going to read in Shulchan Aruch that we will be called upon to read Parshas Kedoshim. But then comes along Minhag. And Minhag, the tradition, has such a power that could even supplant the din. It could undermine the din itself. Mikra din, we should be reading on Parshas Kedoshim. If it's not Erev Rosh Chodesh or Rosh Chodesh, Toivos Yerushalayim. That is the parsh. That is the Haftorah we should read from Yechezkel. But we don't. We avoid it. The minhag is not like that. We're not going to change the books. The books are going to reflect the pristine halacha in conceptual terms. But in practical terms, we do not want to read this Haftorah. We do not want to criticize and inspect in a very negative way the people, the residents of Eretz Yisrael. And the Rav saw in that minhag, as he always did, because he was famous for his study and his insights into minhagim. To him, to the Rav, a minhag in Yisrael had to be studied, has to be understood. It's like learning a mission almost. This minhag has a tremendous lesson for us. You know, there were people, and there are still people, that continue to criticize the state of Israel. And they look for the negatives. They see the drawbacks. They tend to usually point to the fact that the state is not a religious state. It's a secular state. It's a democratic state. I remember when I did army service, we had non-Jews in my battalion. They got, instead of a Tanakh, they got their own Bible when we, you know, to take a hashpa at the end of the service. And of course we were rubbed the wrong way. We are alienated. But the Rav did not tolerate those who would get up and attack the state of Israel and say, oh, it's a secular state, it's anti-religious, blah, 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 blah. You have something positive to say, or even a criticism that's constructive. You want to add something, you want to start a movement, you want to complain because we have to get up and make a protest? That's one thing. But just to badmouth the state of Israel, he says, you know what you fit into? You fit into the category of that Jew who was standing on top of Rebbe Eliezer and he was reading the Haftorah from Yechezkel of the Toivos Yerushalayim. And even though technically he's within his rights to do so, but we don't paskin Lamaisa, in other words, we paskin in theory like the Chachamim, but in the Lamaisa, in the actuality and the practicality of it, we're going to accept the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Do you see why the Rav was very upset with those who spoke against Eretz Yisrael? Again, constructive criticism is something else. The Rav himself would criticize the state if he felt it was, when missionaries were running wild over here, he got up and he yelled in front of the Mizrahi, this is not, we cannot accept this, we have to protest. And I'll tell you something else. The Rav used to invoke a statement of the Nitziv Mivalosh, the Rashiv Valosh of Naftali Tzvi Berlin. The Nitziv was of the opinion, in answering the Ramban's famous question, the Ramban asks in Parsha Shlach, what were the Meraglim guilty of? After all, the Meraglim came back with a negative report because they were told, they were sent for the express purpose, that was their Shlichut, to tell us what they saw in the land of Israel. And what they saw was a rough business. The people were burying the dead. There were giants. You know, it was fearful. It was overwhelming. So where's the chet and the meraglim? So the Netziv says that we know in Halacha there's an Issur Lashon Hara, and there's an Issur Lashon Hara even if you tell the truth about something, about someone. If I tell something disparaging, Chas V'Shalom, about somebody else, even though it's the truth, I violate the Issur Lashon Hara. And the Netziv went a step further. He said, apparently, from the parish of Shlach, you see that there's an Issur Lashon Hara, not just against the human being, but even against a land. Even against Eretz Yisroel.
Yeah, it's not Lashon Hara if it's for the right reason. Like, if he's asking you if we should go to this land, because if it's safe land for us to live in, then the Lashon Hara would say, no, it's not.
So the Netziv was of the opinion that they should have presented it in a different light. They should have given a more well-balanced opinion or perspective. They should have emphasized the positive. Within the whole context of Eretz Yisrael, they should have said, as Kolev said, Olo Nala Kinuchal, the Akash Baruch, we have to rely on God, promise us this land. It's a wonderful land. It's got beautiful features to it. This is what you have to emphasize. You talk about another human being, you talk about his positive. You talk about the land of Israel, which is specified as the land, it's the Shem Eretz Yisrael, the Kishkas that we spoke about, the essence of the land. You have to look for the positive. And that's why the Netziv was, in a sense, you know, had an impact on Rav Soloveitchik when he spoke about the fact that we should avoid looking for the negative. Now, I want to call to your attention number 11, which is on your page. And this is a Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayis in Masechta Bechoros, Perek Dalet. And there the Rambam writes, Shebnei Eretz Yisrael Hem Asher Nikroim Kahal. Very fascinating Rambam. The Rambam wants to understand, why is it that a Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael has such power? It can give smicha, confer ordination, it has powers in terms of Kiddush HaKodesh, and even in Chutz Lartz, the Beis Din is only an extended arm of the power and the authority of Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael. What's so special about Eretz Yisrael? And the Rambam's answer is that the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, the people who live in the land of Israel, they're considered kahal. What does the word kahal mean? They are the community, the assembly, the congregation of Israel, correct? Hashem, Karam, Kol, Akol. The Rambam deduces Psukim to prove. And he says, even if it would only be 10 Jews in Eretz Yisrael, they become a Kol. Ve'choshen l'misha zulasam b'chutz l'aretz. And it doesn't matter how many people are in Chutz Lartz. There's a special status, halachically, al pi din, to those residents of Eretz Yisrael. And anything that needs to be done by Klal Yisrael, by the people of Israel, for example, Smicha Zkenin, or Egla Rufa, or Kiddush HaKodesh, this has to be done on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Which Beis Din can represent Klal Yisrael? The Kohol Beis Din. Which is the Kohol Beis Din? The Beis Din of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, the Tzibur, this concept of a community that forms one entity, that is a concept that's specifically designated for and only for Eretz Yisrael. So smicha means that you are given powers and authorities over the tzibur, right? So you're a samuch, and you want to pass on those powers to someone else. That's called smicha. So the second one can now represent the tzibur. But who can represent the tzibur? Only smuchim of Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's unique about the tzibur of Eretz Yisrael? Hashras Hashchina. The Shechina loves the people of Israel, the tzibur of Israel. So when we experience Hashras Hashchina in Eretz Yisrael, the Shechina emanates from Eretz Yisrael, and here in Eretz Yisrael we become a tzibur. Let's go over to number 12. You remember that there's a mitzvah of Egla Rufa. We have to find the Rotzeach. We don't know what city he came from. So we have a whole process, a whole ceremony of Egla Rufa. So the Pasuk says, Kaper li'amcha asher padisa. The Sifri says, Kaper li'amcha elu achayim, asher padisa elu amesim. Unbelievable. Through the process of Egla Rufa, we're asking for a kapar, an atonement, not just for those who live, but even for those who are no longer amongst the living. So the Sifri makes the comment, Melame, this teaches us, Sha Mesim Trichim Kapara, that it's unbelievable that we can atone for the Mesim. We have to do a whole process of Egla Rufa to bring about an atonement even for those who are dead. Now, if you take a look at the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, which is number 13 on your page, a little bit to the right, the Gaon has a slightly different girsa in this Sifri. Unbelievable, the kapara that we effectuate as living people will affect an atonement for even those who died back at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It connects all of Knesset Yisrael, the people of Israel, throughout all the generations. Nimtzeinu lemeidim sheshofech damim chote ad Yetzias Mitzrayim. He who spills blood now has an impact on all the generations, even back to Yetzias Mitzrayim, by taking away this person's life, and that person can no longer be part of the process of doing actions which could be mechaper for the mason. He's completely removed from this earth. You're really affecting all of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. So an atrocity happened in Eretz Yisrael, somebody was murdered. Now we all get together as one tzibur, the Chaim and even the Mason, and we all require kapara. It's unbelievable. The actions of one person, one murderer, has an impact, a ripple effect on the entire tzibur, the Chaim and the Mason. We all require kapara. Each person has to share in that responsibility, in that chet, and therefore we need kapara. So who's going to effectuate this kapara? Bezdin HaGadol, through the process of Egla Rufa. But where is this Bezdin? It's in Eretz Yisrael. Because the Bezdin in Eretz Yisrael, the Bezdin HaGadol in Eretz Yisrael, the High Court in Israel, they represent the entire Tzibur of Klal Yisrael. And insofar as all the Tzibur shares in the responsibility for this terrible thing that took place, this disastrous catastrophe of murder, then Egla Rufa, to bring Kapara, is an act on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael, spanning all the generations. That has to be effectuated by the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael.
The land also needs a kapara, right?
What do you say?
The land also needs a kapara.
The land
story
also.
That a guy, I forgot who, but he like slept with a lot of prostitutes, mm-hmm. and then he begged before he died, he begged for forgiveness. And he told like go to the hills.
Elazar ben Azaria.
Yeah.
Derdaya, excuse me. Yeah. Right. Gemara and Avodah Zarah Yitzayim.
For ourselves, kapara.
Right, to get everybody praying on his behalf.
Is this why people say like we don't have smicha anymore because we were all in Galus?
Correct, because the smicha of Eretz Yisrael eventually was completely cut off. There's no unbroken chain of smicha that takes us back to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore we no longer have smicha.
Now we still have rabbis.
Yeah. We have rabbis. That's just a heter horah that allows you to paskin, but you don't have the powers of a samuch. Now, my friends, I want to share with you another story. When I was in the Rav Shia, there was a terrible episode that happened called Sabra and Shatila. Do you remember this? Those were two camps of refugee camps of Palestinian refugees in Lebanon, and as a result of the green light that was given to the chief of staff of the army by the prime minister at that time was Menachem Begin, Olam Shalom, so they allowed the terrorists really to be murdered, and it was a terrible thing. But within the context of that whole period of time, it's back in the early 80s, Menachem Begin issued an order that allowed planes, Israeli planes, to drop bombs on refugee camps. Now, in those refugee camps, there were terrible terrorists that were attacking the north on a daily basis. But who was killed as a result of these bombings? Innocent people. Not just terrorists, but men, women, and children straight across the board. In fact, in one particular bombing, 800 people lost their lives. And the whole world was up in arms against the state of Israel. And in the Shia, we were all wondering if Rav Soloveitchik was going to make any comment about it, because it was so profound, the whole issue. It was so upfront, although he doesn't, usually didn't spend time in Shia talking politics. That wasn't what he saw as his main responsibility, but from time to time he would make a comment. And lo and behold, he made a comment. He was very, very upset. I would say he was livid. You know, very, very few times in my life that I saw my Rebbe literally angry. And this was one of them. Who gives him the right? You know, he's talking about Begin. Who gives him the right to take the lives of innocent women and children and so forth? So, by the way, today, what we're seeing, especially in Gaza, is that the women and children are not so innocent. You know?
Yeah.
But that's a different story. We're turning back the clock now about 3 decades and more. So listen to what the Rav said. This is fascinating. The Rav said that when we go out to battle, and of course we have to defeat our enemy, who are we commanded and licensed to kill? Whose lives? And the Rav invoked the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim. This is in Perikei Milchus Melachim. Let me just get this for you so I can read the language of the Rambam to you. The Rambam says, he says, if the people in that country do not accept an extension of the arm of peace, and they refuse, osim imam milchama v'horgim kol hazcharim hagdolim. What does that mean? Kol hazcharim hagdolim. The adult males, those are the soldiers. V'ein horgim isha v'lo katan. We do not destroy the lives of women and children.
Sorry, what's worth?
This is Perik Vav Milchus Melachim Alocha Dalet. Okay, it's not on your page. I wasn't able to get everything on the page. Now, in Perek Hey Halacha Dalid, the Rambam addresses himself to a specific mitzvah of milchama against the 7 nations that occupy the land of Israel, Shiva Amamim. And the Rambam says, Kol habo liyodo echad mehem, v'lo hargo over v'lo sasen. So in the case of Shiva Amamim, who we commanded to destroy? Everyone. And the Rav pointed out that in the case of Shiva Amamim, the Rambam doesn't employ the term milchama. He's not talking about a battle. The laws of milchama are not primary here. Of course, we're going out to battle to conquer the land of Israel. But in addition to that, there's a mitzvah to destroy every life that's not part of the framework of milchama. It's a separate, independent mitzvah. And therefore, kol habo liyodo echad mehem v'lo hargo over v'lo sasen. In Halacha Hey, the Rambam says, v'chein mitzvah say li'abed zecher amolek. In addition to the 7 nations that occupy the land, the Girgashi and so forth, we have to destroy Amalekim. Shenemar timche zecher amolek. And the mitzvah is to destroy the entire Amalek. But here the Rambam doesn't say kol habo liyodo mizer Amalek. You know, you get a chance to kill any member of Amalek and you didn't do so, that you violate a law in the Torah. So the Rav wanted to say that basically there are 3 dinim in milchama. There's 1 general dinim milchama. When we reach out for peace with our neighbors and they refuse, they want to go to battle. There the mitzvah milchama means we fight and destroy the zcharim gedolim, but not the isha katan. Then we have the special mitzvah on the other extreme pole of Zion Amamim, and there the mitzvah is to destroy every single person, every nation, every member of the nation of these 7 nations, lo sechaya kol neshama. And if somebody comes to you from those 1 nation and you don't kill that person, then you violate a lo sasa. And in the middle, between the 2 polar extremes, you have Amalek. Amalek on the one hand is a mitzvah milchama. But on the other hand, since the Torah says Timcha Zecher Amalek, we have to kill every member of Amalek. But the Rambam doesn't say that if a person from Amalek comes to you as an individual and you fail to kill him, that you violate a losas. So it means that with regard to Shiva Amamim, that's the most extreme case, that mitzvah is not limited to milchama. Milchama is incumbent on the entire community of Israel, and we go out against their community. No. It's an individual chiyuv that's incumbent on every yachid to kill every individual member of the seven amim. Los chai kol nesham. With regard to Amalek, on the other hand, there's a mitzvah of milchama, which means it's not a mitzvah that's incumbent on me, as individuals. It's a mitzvah on Klal Yisrael, let the melech go out to milchama. And the Rambam has a whole say there, here in Perek Hei, Mehilchos Melachim, to tell us when exactly the mitzvah milchama applies in regard to Amalek. So there's a whole seder which we have to go through until we're ready for the mitzvah of Amalek. So the Rav asked, I don't understand. If the mitzvah of Amalek is a mitzvah milchama, it's not an individual chiyuv that's incumbent upon every yachid, then the law of milchama requires that we kill the zecharim gedolim. Why is it in the case of Amalek that we're called upon to destroy men, women, and children? And the Rav, in a very rare moment, he very rarely got into what I call Tamei HaMikra, you know, to try to understand the reason behind the mitzvah. Here he sort of, he overstepped his own rules, his own bounds. And he says that the reason why in the case of Amalek, the mitzvah will come against Amalek requires that we kill every individual member of Amalek, not just Zecharim Gedolim, is because we are taking retaliation against what Amalek did to us. Who did Amalek attack?
Israel.
All of Klal Yisrael, men, women, and children. And we saw it over and over again. Even in Haman you saw it. Right? Anoshim, noshim, etaf. In other words, Amalek was not fighting a milchama according to the rules of, you know, the international Geneva, you know, the Geneva Convention, you know. You know, we'll fight against the Israelites who go out to battle against us, a military campaign. We'll destroy the soldiers of Israel. No! They wanted to kill every man, women, and children, men, women, and children in Klal Yisrael. And that's the nature of the milchama that we have against Amalek, to destroy every member of Amalek.
So then wouldn't the Rav be for the bombings that were happening in the refugee camps? Because if they're killing our men, women, and children, we should be able to retaliate.
Oh, so that's excellent. The question is,
do you classify them as Amalek?
Exactly. In other words, when the terrorists come and attack us, and absolutely, they're out there.
The stories when they come into the houses.
Yeah, they want to butcher every last Jew. There's no question about them. But does that mean that their nation, in this case, let's say the Palestinians, become Amalek? That's the issue. And at least at that time, I'm going back to 1982, the Rav was not willing to classify all Palestinians as Amalekim. Now, what he would say today, I don't know. It's getting a little out of hand today. You know, especially, as I said before, in the Gaza Strip. But to say that every Palestinian is Amalekian, therefore we have to, you know, there's a whole new mitzvah that applies here, that you have to destroy every man, woman, and children, I don't know. If, on the other hand, we see the war against terrorism as milchama, and it's not the Zayin Amamim, then it's only against the Zecharim Gedolim. Again, if there are female terrorists that join the bands, we're going to kill them too. But does that mean, therefore, that the Palestinians are Amalekim and we have to destroy the entire nation of Palestine? Do you follow me? So that's something that I wanted to share with you. A lot of what we've discussed today is going to lead us to tomorrow's discussion about the state of Israel, Yom HaTzma'ut, the establishment of the state. Should we celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut? How do we celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut? And the Rav had definite opinions on this.
Yeah, don't people say Hallel?
Correct. There are people who say Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut. We want to know what the Rav did, and I have a few stories to tell you about that, but that's going to be for tomorrow. I just want to leave you tonight with one last idea.
Where did the Rav even pass that in the month?
I'll figure out tomorrow.
Did he say Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut or not? That's what we want to talk about tomorrow.
No. Did he classify them as Amalek?
That's what I told you. In 1982, when I was in the Shia, or maybe it was 1983, he was very upset about the bombing of Palestinian refugee camps and killing women and children. He did not apply the rule of Amalek, no way, no how. I can't tell you what the Rav would say today. I can just guess.
It
would be purely speculative on my part.
How could you apply Amalek?
Because the Rav was of the opinion, based on his father's chiddush, that Amalek is any nation that wants to destroy us and wipe us off the face of the earth. And if you're willing to say that every last Palestinian is interested in destroying us and wiping us off the face of the earth, then Enochinami, the Rav, in the name of his father at least, would maintain that they have a din of Amalek. But the Rav wasn't...
psychological.
does it have to be?
It's lechuv and achide migoy. You know, I don't know if it's most of the country or part of the country, the whole nation or part of the nation. I don't know. Anyway, I just want to tell you the following story. There was a what's called a Knesia Gdola, that's the major one time in a year annual get together convention, if you will, the Aguda party of all the greats in Aguda. It took place in Yerushalayim in a very, very substantial, significant hotel.
When was this?
I'm not sure what it is. I'll try to find out for you the year. And Rav Shechter tells the following story in Nefesh HaRa. He says that on top of this hotel, there was a blue and white flag, the flag of the State of Israel, that was flying high, correct? Proudly. So some of the members of the Knesia Gdola were feeling a little bit uncomfortable about the situation. On the other hand, they realized that to ask the hotel to take off the Israeli flag, this hotel in Yerushalayim, you know, that's already going too far. That's not what you call a balmidos, you know, would never do such a thing, right? If you have any sensitivity. So at the end, what they did was they asked the hotel if they wouldn't mind putting up the flags of all the other states, so that next to the Israeli flag, all the other countries were represented.
You mean like of the world?
I don't know if the entire world, perhaps those countries that maybe that had relations with the Jewish state, I don't know. So that was the pshara, the compromise that was worked out. So they put up, he has a list here of the American flag and the French flag and the British flag and so forth and so on. So then they didn't feel so uncomfortable about the fact that the, you know, it wasn't just the Israeli flag that was flying over the hotel. Fine. Now the press got a hold of the story, the secular press in Israel, and they had a blast with it. You know, they started attacking the Aguda. How could they do such a thing? They started talking about the British. You know, the British was extremely cruel to Israel when, you know, the refugees from the Shoah came and they tried to enter into the land and the British wouldn't let them in. You remember that? You're aware of that period of time, you know, in the 3 years between the end of the Holocaust and the establishment of the state. So how could you put up, you know, the British flag because you don't want to put up the Israeli flag? It doesn't make any sense. You okay?
Yeah.
And they had some other arguments, you know, and this was very... So anyway, there was a whole tumult in Eretz Yisrael, and in that period of time, the Rav was giving a shir, a drasha, in front of the Mizrahi party. As I told you, he jumped ship from the Aguda to Mizrahi, that we discussed at great length last week. And someone asked the Rav if he believed that the flag of Israel has any halachic status. Now, that's not the kind of question you ask a brisk alamdin, because, you know, in brisk, you have to have something that's halachically, you know, chalushem, as we say. It's got to have a status. And it's difficult to find a status to the Israeli flag. But yet the Rav came up with a very fascinating response to this question that was asked of him. He says, first of all, the concept of a degel, of a flag, is a very Jewish concept. Anybody know in which parasha will find the... Naso, great, but Midbar, Naso, where the Torah describes the Masaot, you know, the journeys, the sojourns of the people of Israel, where they encamped, the Degolim of each Shevet, what was, you know, Chazal and the Medrash describe what was on each Degel of each Shevet, and the symbols that were so profound. And, in fact, there's a Sif in Shulchan Aruch, in Yoredeya, that says that a country should have a flag. Okay, so there's a lot of discussion about that. But the Rav says the following. There's halach in Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, in Shin Nun Beis, in the laws of Avelus, that when we bury the dead, they're buried in Tachrichim. Tachrichim could be very expensive, it doesn't matter, but it's a very holy thing. You know, how do you say Tachrichim in English?
Burial shrouds.
The shrouds?
Burial shrouds.
Burial shrouds.
Of the mace.
Of the mace. And even the Nasi in Israel, even the chief of staff, has to be buried in Tachrichim. Now, in Siman Shin Samach Dalid, the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the name of Rishonim that if we find a Jew that was killed specifically killed before because he was Jewish, then we bury him exactly the way we find him, in his clothing, without takrich. Why? Because his clothing are saturated with what? With blood. And that blood has kedusha to it because that was his sacrifice, because he was killed simply because he was a Jew.
Poison.
What do you say?
Poison.
So again, in the case of poison, then you would bury him in tachrichim. But we're talking about a case where a person's, you know, person was killed and his begadim tragically are saturated in his own blood because he was brutally murdered. Correct. And he says the reason why we do such a thing is kedei lahalos chema velinkom nekem. In other words, that in Shamayim, when this person is buried and he comes in front of the Kisei HaKavod, it should be obvious that his kvura, his burial, is different than the burial of other deceased. He's not buried in regular classical takrichim and shrouds. And this somehow, the blood of Kiddush Hashem, should be a ma'orer rachme Shamayim. It should lead to the grace and the compassion of God. There's a similar halacha that's brought down in the Sefer Chassidim that if you have a house and the people living in that house were killed al Kiddush Hashem, and there is blood, the blood stains on the very walls or the stones of the house, then balabayis bo latuach besid kiras habayis adam lo yavro liyatichav. You're not allowed to cover over those blood stains. They have to be left exposed, based on the pasuk Eretz Al Tachasi Dami, that the blood of Kiddush Hashem should not be covered over. It should always remain as a sense of force that should bring divine wrath against our enemies who killed us. Kol zman she'ein adam mechusa, as long as the blood is exposed, it's revealed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu nokem. God will protect the dignity of the Jewish people, take revenge against those who destroyed us. So the Rav said, you ask me about the flag of the State of Israel? He says, look, at the end of the battle for the establishment of the state, which is called in Hebrew Milchemet HaShikrur, in 1947-1948, what's it called in English? The Independence War, right? The War for Independence. He says that there was plenty of blood that was spilled, Jewish blood, by our enemies. And he says that although a lot of the land that on which Jewish blood was spilled was given back after the partition to non-Jews, right, to the Arabs, and they would stay outside the state, and that was the decision that unfortunately we had to live with. But he says that an amazing amount of blood, of Jewish blood, innocent blood, was spilled in order to raise the Israeli flag over those many areas of the state which were left in Jewish hands. He says, Harbe lochamim nehargu ba b'shoshem masru es nafsham ach v'rak, only for the purpose of establishing a place for Jewish people, only in order to raise a flag of this nation, of the Jewish nation. He says, therefore, according to my feeling, even though halachically I can't tell you that the Israeli flag has any sanctity to it, but since it's a symbol of Jewish blood, of Shfichas Dam Yehudi, because so many Jews were willing, for the sake of that flag, for the sake of that state, to give up their lives, he says, therefore, the Degel Yehudi, as it's menafef, as it's waved, ma'orer rachmei shamayim al Am Yisrael. The flag of the State of Israel, says the Rav, will arouse the compassion of the divine being, because so much blood was spilled for the sake of establishing a haven for the Jewish people, to get Jewish land back into our sovereignty, to establish a state and wave that flag. And the Rav therefore thought, in a brilliant chat, that there's a connection, there's an analogy between Jewish blood, literally Jewish blood, which has to be left megula because it's ma'orer rachmei shamayim, and the flag of Israel, which too is Ma'orer Rach Hashem. Okay, then we'll stop here. I thank you for joining me. If you can come tomorrow, it'll be great, and we'll talk about Yom HaTzmuah in the Rav's way of thinking. Okay, then.
Sure,
thank you so much.
Do you want the sheets back?
Well, it's up to you. If you want to keep it, it's a gift. If you want to give it back, I'll take it back.
Do you have the key?
Yes. Oh, I'm so sorry.